This is Focus on EMU on 89.1 WEMU. I'm Patrick Campion, and I'm sitting alongside Roger Kernsmith, a professor of sociology. I got his name right this time. See, this is a third go-round on the name. All right. Professor of sociology at Eastern Michigan University. And the reason Roger is here today is to talk to us about a Title IX survey going on across Eastern's campus. And we have a couple goals here. One is to answer questions about just the basics of what is Title IX, how does it apply across all facets of academia and higher education, not just athletics, because I think we think of Title IX very much in terms of athletics. And then specifically the survey, why is it important to our campus community? And once it's done, what results are going to come out of this and what actions may be taken based on what's revealed through this survey? So thanks, Roger, for being here with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for talking to us about this.
So I mentioned real quickly Title IX, and I think for me, and I think a lot of other people, and maybe I'm just, you know, using my own bias here, but I think we hear about Title IX a lot applied to college athletics.
Right.
The balance between opportunities for male and female athletes in higher education. And certainly there's stuff brewing around Eastern right now. We won't get into that because I know there's some ongoing legal issues there. So we'll stay away from that, but let's talk about Title IX in general. So give me a history. What is Title IX, and how does it apply in this case, and what are you actually applying here at Eastern?
Well, Title IX was initially a package of legislative movements that granted equality to all students on campuses receiving federal funding. And so the specific part that I'm interested in and that the survey's dealing with is making sure that students on campuses, all students, have equal protection in terms of their personal safety.
Okay.
And there's been a great deal of work around Title IX in the Obama administration, not to bring politics too much into this. Vice President Joe Biden did a very serious effort to deal with the issues of sexual assault on campuses across the country. There's actually an epidemic of sexual assault on campus. Some statistics show as ratios as high as 1 in 4 women on college campuses experience some sort of really significant sexual assault.
And what we're looking at is in terms of how the university deals with it, the mechanisms they have to ease reporting, to make people more comfortable in that environment.
Absolutely,
yeah. And then on the flip side, engender an environment where those things just don't occur or don't occur as often. I don't think we'll ever get to completely zero, absolutely nothing happening.
Probably
I mean, that would be wonderful.
Yes.
That would be wonderful. But I think, you know, a very, very rare occurrence would be a great goal.
Yes.
So how long has Title IX been around? I mean, what's the history on this?
I'm not a legal scholar, so okay. I'm not that familiar with it. My understanding is in the late 70s.
Okay, all right. So yes. this isn't a new thing.
Not at all. No.
But I think you're right. I think that former Vice President Biden's work on this brought it to the forefront. And the statistic you mentioned, that's something we've heard a lot. 1 in 4 women on college campuses are the victim of some sort of sexual assault.
And somewhere between 1 in 7 and 1 in 8 men.
Okay.
So this isn't just about women.
Okay, great. Thank you for clarifying that, too. Yeah, that was the flip side of that is we hear very often about the 1 in 4, but that statistic is kind of buried sometimes. So
yes,
you're right. And then the focus at Eastern certainly isn't on just one specific sex or gender.
Oh, not at all.
You know, so,
completely gender neutral.
So we're looking at this from everyone's perspective.
And also, you know, in the current sort of stream of politics and social movements now, you can't ignore the Me Too movement as, you know, as a context for this. And that did not sort of spur us to engage in this study at all. I mean, there's a much bigger current, but it certainly provides an interesting context in which this is all going down.
Right, and the framework in which you're doing this is different than it was a few years ago. I think that for me personally, we've seen a lot more people, men and women, willing to share their stories,
yes.
both of issues that they've had and things they've experienced. But I think we also see a lot more people willing to speak up for themselves and for others because they feel like this is a more supportive environment if you're willing to take the chance. And I think you and I would agree that one of the major issues facing victims of any kind of sexual assault or harassment is a fear of what's going to happen if you speak up.
Well, and I was going to follow up with what you're saying. We're also seeing the horrible stories of the reactions. And in fact, we're even seeing the terrible reactions, you know, the blaming the victim. She deserved it because the clothes she was wearing or she got too drunk, you know. And that has spurred in the field a movement from the no means no movement to the yes means yes, the positive consent movement. And then that's caused critiques of political correctness and, you know, if I don't get a yes, what does a yes mean? And, you know, sort of picking at the details of what all that means.
And I'm sure that on campus here there are programs driven by if you're interested in learning what consent truly is,
yes.
You know,
yeah.
Both for men and for women or any person in any situation, mm-hmm. You know, I think that that's good information to have. And I think one of the incorrect assumptions a lot of people make is that, well, I know what consent means.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, yes. Well, let's sit down and talk about
yes.
that, you know, and that's
yeah.
the beauty of a college campus, right? We get to sit around and talk about things and share knowledge and grow together.
Well, that's, in fact, one thing that we're asking about in the survey is exactly how well do you understand what consent is, which is a challenge to operationalize in a survey, you know,
right.
How do you actually get down to what somebody knows? It's a bigger methodological question,
yeah.
but even you know, in terms of what is consent and how do you understand that? It's a very difficult thing to pick out. And I think we've done a really good job of putting that down on in this survey.
So with the Title IX regulations, is there a goal or is there a that something universities need to adhere to? I mean, what are we beholden to as being an accredited university receiving federal funding and being under this Title IX regulation?
Well, not to be too much of a downer, but we saw a lot of that happen in the Laura Dickinson event. Actually, Laura happened to be one of my students the semester she died.
Oh.
Yeah, it was very tragic. She's a great student. And so, you know, reporting to the community, you know, regular warnings to the community
right.
or reports to the community, whatever they call them. You know, we're seeing those as a result of that. But assuring an environment. Oh, also dealing with reports. We have a great Title IX office on campus run by Melody Warner. She's doing a great job. But yet, you know, there are a lot of issues just in the culture in general, you know,
yeah.
and decisions about whether or not to report things, how to handle them. We have a great public safety department here, but you know they exist in the wider culture.
In case you're not familiar with the Dickinson case, if you haven't heard about it, it is kind of a black mark on the history of EMU. A young student was murdered on campus, and the way it was handled, the way it was reported, the way the information was disseminated to community,
mm-hmm.
Per a federal investigation, which happened after the event unfolded, Eastern was knocked for several things that they did not handle appropriately.
Yep.
And I think that's a vast understatement, and it's not a proud moment in our history, but it is something we have to embrace
yeah.
as a learning moment. Unfortunately, you know, I don't want the death of a student to ever be a learning moment, but I think we can look at that and examine. We found a lot of flaws
mm-hmm.
on campus here in the way those things were handled, and some people suffered greatly. I mean,
yep.
obviously none so much as that student and her family.
And her family, yes.
But, you know, fact of the matter is a family was allowed to bury their daughter without knowing that she had, in fact, been murdered.
Mm-hmm.
And that is horrifying, and I have kids, and I would never want to have to go through that circumstance. So I think, you know, obviously a bad case, but a good example of how not to handle communication.
That is true. Yes.
The learning situation for all of us, and I think,
yeah.
you know, and it's still on our minds here. And
yes.
when you're doing this kind of Title IX stuff on campus here, I'm sure it comes up.
This is very much on my mind as I do this
great.
Research, of course.
Great. And I
yeah.
think, you know, let's honor her memory
yeah.
by making it better for every student we have here now. I think that, you know,
yes.
I think you and I would share that goal.
Yeah.
You know, we need to acknowledge our mistakes and learn from them and grow as a campus and assure the students that are here now that that stuff's not going to happen.
Well, and in the context of Title IX, the federal investigation that happened afterward, that was all in the context of Title IX.
Okay, great. So
yes.
perfect example.
I mean, that's right. why I brought it up.
So
yeah.
they said, you know what, we looked at the structure of what you should have
yes.
done based on these regulations, and
yep.
you failed in this area, this area, this area, and then the university was assessed a rather large fine because of that.
Which they paid to the Department of Education
right.
under Title IX.
And then they had to show that they were making positive changes.
Exactly.
So here we are many years later,
yes.
And we're still working on this.
Absolutely.
And this is the kind of thing that's always evolving, always a work in progress,
mm-hmm.
and the purpose of the survey that we're talking about that you're here to talk
yes.
about today is
yeah.
to get a feel for the current campus climate, and maybe, and you correct me if I'm wrong, maybe look at what we're doing right, and maybe look at things we can change to better serve our students.
Well, there's been a wave of these nationally, these kinds of sexual assault surveys, and many of them start off very simple. We're just going to measure the amount of sexual assault incidents on campus, and then to see how many have been reported, how many haven't been reported, and then they'll sort of dipstick whether or not you trust the mechanisms on campus to handle it, or what do you think is going to happen? Did you, and if you did report something, were you satisfied with the way it was handled? It's very basic, and that information is very necessary, very useful, but it's limited. And very often we find, as we went back over old surveys and old studies, and by old I mean 5, 10 years, you know, 10 years maximum, we're finding that really the findings are about the same. The rates of incidents are about the same. The feelings, the fear of sexual assault is about the same. And we wanted to do a bit more than that. So we decided to not only include these sort of, you know, basic measures of prevalence and incidence, but how many but we also wanted to understand what is the sexual climate. And so measuring some things that are maybe not healthy in terms of sexual life on campus, but not necessarily illegal. So one of the areas I study is sexual coercion.
Okay.
It may not be nagging your partner to have sex with you when they don't want to may not be illegal. But it's not the best choice in a relationship.
Right.
Some stalking behaviors, for instance, swinging by their place of business, or you know, scheduling your classes so you know yours match theirs.
Well, even having a campus environment, if you're a student that's choosing to remain celibate for any reason,
yes,
that you don't feel awkward and an outsider because
true,
you're
yeah.
not having sex,
yeah,
you know, and I'm sure you're probably looking at LGBTQ issues,
yes,
as well,
for sure.
And sexual,
yes,
identity and gender,
yes,
identity issues, and
yeah,
and
you we spent hours trying to come up with a survey question to measure just that sexual,
okay, yeah,
identity.
Well, that's,
yeah.
And so let's talk about the study for a second. The, mm-hmm, the survey. I'm a kind of a survey geek. As a PhD student in technology and crossing over into communications, designing surveys to be effective is a huge part of that.
Yeah.
So if you haven't ever done this, I think that what we're talking about is the results of a survey can be grossly affected, negatively or positively,
mm-hmm,
by poor or good design.
Yes.
So how long does it take to put something like this survey together?
Well, first of all, we have a great team. It's been led by a world expert in survey design. Her name's Solange Samoys. She has a joint appointment in sociology and women's studies. She's really led this. She's arranged for the on-campus funding. She's just an amazing colleague of mine. And so we had her expertise, and it took us, a group of us, I think there's six, about a year to write this survey. We pre-tested it 3 times, where we would sit down with students, ask them to, these are all volunteers, ask them to go through all this, and then question by question, section by section, give us their responses. You know, how did they feel? What did they, you know, what other responses would they have wanted to be able to add to this? And so we have worked this thing over like a rented mule. I mean,
yeah,
we could not do this anymore.
How do you gauge honesty in a survey like this, too? I know that when you're, mm-hmm, talking about sexual issues, I think that's an area where we tend to try and present a different outward-facing self,
sure,
than we really truly feel. How do you overcome those kinds of things?
Well, for one, my experience, I have done surveys on stalking, sexual coercion, all kinds of deviance issues, and including juvenile delinquency, stuff like that. And I have found that people are just sort of inherently honest about that, especially, and I think the real key is guaranteeing confidentiality, which in this context, we have bent over backwards. We've in fact, farmed out the online survey part of this to Wayne State.
Hmm.
They have a great unit at the Center for Urban Studies there. And so they're managing it all, so none of the individual data is actually owned or seen by anybody here at EMU.
Oh, that's a great thing, too. We have a similar,
yes,
procedure here. If we're reporting on something very negative
sensitive
against Eastern,
okay,
we'll,
yeah,
bring in an outside person,
yes,
to look at our work to make sure. You know, so
yeah,
great, that's a great,
yeah,
point.
So the only thing we get is data that is stripped of any identifying information. That made it a little hard because we're offering incentives to participate in the survey. We're sampling students from the roughly 16, 17,000 registered students here on campus. We are random sampling. And then they've received contact from the provost, they've received contact from the faculty, contact from Wayne State. And of those, we're looking to get the highest response rate possible from those chosen students. Other models use what's more of a census model, where every single student is asked to participate.
Yeah, but you don't know who you're going to get back.
Exactly. You know, right? Yeah, and also those surveys tended to be a lot smaller with limited data. We actually struggled a lot with trying to cover all of these things about the sexual environment of campus. A lot of things got put in, and that makes a very long, unwieldy survey. And the more people you talk to, the less the smaller the incentive is.
So you spent a year putting this together. When did the survey's actually open now, right?
It opened, I think, Tuesday. Yes.
Okay, all right. And for those that are interested, you said it is you're pushing it to a specific portion of the population.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So if you've gotten an invitation, what would have it looked like?
It would have been an email. Okay. An email letter from the provost, Rhonda Longworth, who's been very, very supportive of this project. She's amazing. There would also be an email contact from Wayne State, and then an email with a link to the survey. It's an online survey. With I think EMU letterhead and Wayne State letterhead.
And just out of curiosity, has communication gone out to faculty, for example, or other instructional staff to say, hey, let your students know if you've gotten this?
Yes, we've been trying to talk to anybody who'll stay still long enough to listen.
Great, and that's part of our reasoning here today.
Exactly.
I'm 100% open on that. If you have gotten that invitation, or if you have students that have gotten it, please encourage them, because we all know that the greater number
important.
Of people, right, the better results we're going to get. Yes. The bigger the sample size, the better the results.
Yes,
generally
in response rate
always,
in particular.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So the survey's open. When does it close?
We plan to be in like make it available for 5 weeks.
Okay. So we've got about a month ish left.
Yeah, a
here.
Little more. Yeah.
Okay. So
And as we're seeking a certain number of students, so we're looking for 2,000 students maximum. So as those initial invitations start to get older, and then our response rate starts to look like it's getting lower, we will be inviting more students.
Oh, great. So there could be a follow-up. So if you haven't gotten
absolutely.
Something yet, in a couple of weeks when you're looking at return rates and response rates, you might actually. So if I'm if I'm a student and I get that invitation, what's the process I'm going to go through?
Really, you click on the link, and depending on how fast and depending on your answers, it could take anywhere from 15 to 45 minutes.
So there's no, I don't have to go sit in a room with electrodes attached to my head.
No,
none of that kind of survey.
Okay. No, not at all.
All right. So it's a fully online survey that you can just click through real fast wherever you might be, even if you're just on your phone.
Well, carefully. Let's say click through carefully and thoughtfully. But
As quickly as you can do that.
Yes.
You know, knowing students on campus, having taught
here. And sometimes, there's a skip pattern, they call it. So if you answer no to one question or yes, then you may skip an entire section of it if it doesn't apply to you.
Okay.
And we've tried to work that logic out so people aren't wasting time.
And just to not get into too much specifics, but what kind of questions would the students see on this survey?
Well, as I said earlier about, there's prevalence and incidence. Have these things happened to you? But also about, these less legalistic definitions of sort of sexual misbehavior, coercion, stalking. Also about attitudes about campus, some demographic issues. So we can see, are there inequalities along, majority-minority issues, along sexual orientation lines, gender issues as well.
Right, and we've talked a lot about race. We've talked a lot about gender issues on this campus over the last few years. So I think this hits at the heart of things. Is this in any way an educational opportunity for those taking the survey?
Do you see
that students might get this and go, wow, I've never really thought about this?
You know, it didn't pan out, but you probably know about the Learning Beyond the Campus, requirement. We at one point thought about trying to get this to count as a Learning Beyond the Campus, but the issue of confidentiality,
right?
Because we would need to know who you are.
Right. You'd have to be able to certify you actually took the survey.
Exactly.
Then you're no longer anonymous. Once it goes on your transcript.
But I really do think, and I actually, as a professor, often think that exams are educational experiences too. And I as a student,
especially
learn
if
things.
You don't study,
right? And so I think in terms of in filling this out and for instance filling out the question about what you think consent is. or positive consent. I think that does, you know, teach you about what those things look like.
Interesting. Okay. So 5-week panel, and you're looking, you know, if you, as you mentioned, if you don't get a great response rate, you're going to reach out to more students.
Yes.
Once the survey is complete, what happens next?
Well, we get the data from Wayne State. We, you know, crunch the numbers. We will be preparing reports for a lot of the major players on campus, the provost office, the Title IX office, the some of the student life people, and then ideally, we're actually as a team going to be probably working all summer to develop ideas about how to apply this. I mean, and this is really the exciting part for me. It's about prevention. So what can we do? You know, are there? And it really depends on what the data is or shows, but. The question would be, are there pieces of the sexual culture on campus that can that we can educate people about? For instance, this issue of consent. It's a really obvious one. Should all incoming freshmen or incoming even transfer students, I mean, that's a big question, should they be required to do some sort of consent, you know, positive consent training? You know, maybe it's a short 15-minute online you know, web course or something like that.
Well, that's an interesting point. I mean, you might find patterns like students that live on campus have very different attitudes
perhaps
about some of these things than students off. Not to presume where the data might lead you, but those are the kinds of things you look for when you get that data back. I get as excited about a set of data, I think, as anybody else, yeah, that when you hand me this, like, wow, what are the things I can glean and learn from this huge swath of data I just received?
And that is actually an interesting. We struggled with the issue of campus versus on campus. Most universities just talk about their campus population. That does not fit EMU.
No.
In fact, we're not even limiting when we ask about has an event happened to you, has a, you know, have you experienced something, which, oh, by the way, I do want to do a little digression. It's really important, even if you haven't experienced any sort of sexual assault or anything negative, we need those people too.
Right.
We have to have the zeros and the ones to compare, so to speak, the yeses and the noes. But in terms of comparing campus versus off campus, we're not even limiting. You know, did something happen to you on campus? Because if you're at home in eCourse or Birmingham or, you know, Jackson or whatever, and those things are happening, you know, bad things are happening to you, you're bringing them to this campus.
Right.
And we, our opinion in the committee was that we need to support that. We need to create a campus environment that supports those people.
Right, and I think that in the end, what we're looking at is more successful outcomes for a larger group of students, and you're right that
absolutely
serving students that have issues off campus is no lesser an issue than students on campus.
Absolutely,
obviously,
yes,
dealing with it on campus is very different,
mm-hmm,
but the likelihood that somebody going through these types of issues off campus,
sure,
is going to hurt their ability to just be a successful human being in general, but
yes,
be a successful student, you know, and that's what we're about, right?
For victims of these things, the consequences are enormous,
right.
You know, and I see it on a regular basis in my classes, and particularly since I teach courses that use these topics, I get a lot of people talking to me about their experiences, very brave people, and it does affect their ability to study, it affects their ability to participate, even to just get the work done.
How much does it change the scope of what you're doing based on the type of population we have? Now, I know we have a lot of non-traditional students,
mm-hmm,
here, but primarily when you look at college students, you're looking at about an 18 to 22,
sure,
23-year-old.
Yeah.
Out on their own for the first time, having formed very interesting ideas wherever,
yes,
they might have been brought,
yep,
up, and now they're brought into a disparate group of, they're not with their friends, they're,
yeah,
not with their, you know, neighbors anymore, they're in a very different place. You know, how often do people come here and go, wow, I had no idea my brain was here and now it's here, or things like that? Or what are they, you know, younger minds too, more,
yeah,
more less mature minds, what do they bring into the forefront?
Well, like you said, they bring, you know, their past experiences. And I think what the situation you're describing is sort of two-pronged. One is they're very eager to learn. They want to experience new things. And so talking to them about positive consent, or, you know, what is an appropriate kind of relationship, or, you know, what rights do other people have, they're very open to that typically. Not all, but typically. On the flip side, they also are coming from a widely disparate set of expectations, and that's something we had to take into account, you know, sort of the multiculturalism. If you are coming from a very fundamentalist Muslim family in Dearborn, you know, what do the answers on our survey mean versus somebody who's coming,
right,
from a different kind of family?
Well, and you might be more accepting, and not just specifically Muslims, but,
mm-hmm,
there are cultures certainly,
sure, yes,
where you're much more accepting of a misogynistic culture.
Absolutely.
And, you know, giving, you know, viewing your role in another man's life,
yes,
very differently, and, you know, might, you might not think about, well, coercing me into sex is not okay.
Sure, absolutely.
Right? That,
yes.
You know, every Friday night we got to do a certain thing, you know, that's just, unfortunately, still we live in a world where in a lot of places that's common.
You owe me,
absolutely. Yeah. And I think
and you mentioned non-traditional students. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Right, no, you're fine.
But
you're the expert here. I'm just the guy that likes to hear himself talk.
This is... the idea of non-traditional students, we need to hear from them too. And we've actually got a few messages from people already saying, well, I'm 42. Should I not? You know, yes, you have a sex life. Right. You're part of this campus.
Right.
Please, please participate. Absolutely.
Do you see...
And I didn't mean to isolate Muslims either.
No.
But that was one group we're thinking about. How do we get them to feel comfortable in the survey?
Cultural backgrounds, religious or the region of the world,
sure.
You know, how close to first-generation immigration affects things. I mean, there's a million things that go into why a person develops the mindset that they do.
Yes.
And now they're here.
And here they are.
You know,
absolutely.
And our job is to serve all students and ensure great outcomes for as many of them as we possibly can, and regardless of the background. Do you see that cultural differences like that affect how people respond to surveys like this? Again, not just specifically Muslims, but are there people that come into this that refuse to accept that things like informed consent are important?
It's hard to know until we see the survey,
sure.
You know, about how they feel about stuff, but we did... in our pretests, we spread it around to as many different kinds of people as possible.
Okay.
And so, in fact, we you can't really oversample in a pretest, but we sought out people of a variety of different backgrounds.
Okay.
So we've tried to insulate as much as possible. But there's, you know, in any sort of measurement, even in the hard sciences, there's always a certain amount of measurement error.
You know, I'd love to see, and I don't know if you have a big enough sample to look at this, but things like if you came through a certain educational system, a high school or something like that, does that affect your attitude about certain kinds of things? We've seen it in the news a lot recently. People are trying to tie very closely students' behavior to the school that they came from. There was obviously the incident
Covington.
In D.C., but then also recently there was that one in Wisconsin.
Yes.
So people start looking really hard at, well, of course these kids act this way. That's what they're being taught.
Sure.
Whether
purposefully
or not, that is what they're being taught. You know, so are you going to be looking for those sorts of things too?
We have not at all. Part of that is the confidentiality. Oh,
okay, great. Oh, perfect point. Right.
Yes.
So you'd have to reveal, I came through the Brighton High School system or Detroit Public Schools.
That starts to narrow really far down. Yeah.
An interesting background, though. I think, you know, trying to establish where the mindset came from is an important part of this, because we can't change minds. We can change structure.
Right.
But we got to know how to adapt to, you know, the huge swath variety. And we have a lot of international students coming here
now.
Yes,
we thought very much a lot about them.
Great. Yeah. And you know, having sat in classes with people from vast variety of different countries, it's really shocking always to me. It's like, challenge me, because my brain is very much American.
Yeah.
I went through the American educational system. I grew up in America. So now people coming here and simple things like not challenging a professor.
Sure.
Because you were taught that is incredibly disrespectful. And there's a lot of professorial staff here that love that. They want that. They want that engagement. Not universally.
Yeah, that's
true. But
it's,
there are many and that encourages. So, you know, we teach our faculty here through our development office. You know, if you see a student from China that is absolutely 100% refusing to engage with you, take them aside and say, I give you permission.
Oh.
I give you permission. Yeah. It's up to you. You know, completely up to you if you want to engage, but don't feel like I will be insulted if you question me or challenge me in any way.
Of course.
You know, so we see those attitudes and those ideas coming in. Not that that's a bad thing, you know.
Yeah.
It's just you can't challenge a person's upbringing and mindset where it was formed, but you provide them a place where that structure fundamentally changes and they can grow into something different.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
So you've got the 5 weeks done. You're
yes.
looking at the data. So this is kind of sounds like the data is going to guide you to what to do next.
Well, you know, as it should. As a scientist, that's what it should happen, and the way it should happen. And so we really are full steam ahead on developing a set of recommendations about prevention strategies. And whether or not those are campus-wide, maybe subtle changes to the Title IX process or the student judicial incident investigation process. I'm not sure. I forget the title of that. Whatever that looks like, you know, there'll be a set of recommendations. And then I'm pretty sure that most of this team is probably going to stick around and work together about trying to implement those new programs.
And there are things like there's an anonymous reporting mechanism here on campus for Title IX issues. And I think, again, part of it that we talked about in the very beginning is just educating students and everyone in our campus community what Title IX is and how it applies. Because, again, I think we – publicly in the media and stuff, we hear about it with athletics more than anything else.
Yes, yeah.
So if we might have students that think, I'm not an athlete, so Title IX doesn't apply to me, when in fact it very, very much does.
Well, and one of the measures for success of some of these programs is reducing the incidence of sexual assault. That is amazing, you know, and of course that is a incredibly important outcome. Right. But there are also other outcomes as well, you know, sort of increased happiness, increased comfort, maybe even better personal relationships if you're not coercing your partner regularly or, you know, stalking them after the relationship ends.
Right,
you know,
well, engendering an environment where people can walk around and feel like it's okay to be me and
feel
I'm not as concerned.
Yeah.
You know, I forget the
Absolutely.
Name of the sociologist that does this the thought experiment with students, but as part of an orientation, I've seen him speak where he goes to the male students in the audience first and says, what do you do to protect yourself actively as a measure, leaving a place of work or business or classroom and going to your car? What do you do? And invariably, most of the men will laugh.
Yeah.
Or they'll say, oh, you know, I've got my mace.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Then he asks the women, and he gets answers like, I've got a knife in my pocket.
Yes.
I'm on the phone with my friend. I never walk when I'm,
right,
I never walk when I'm not in a group. I've got my pepper spray on my keychain ready to go.
Yeah.
I run to my car. I avoid dark areas. I'm aware of where the cameras are. I use CS here on campus. And then the men kind of sit there and
you know,
the jaws drop like, I had no idea that this is constantly on these people's minds.
I study stalking, and I had a student, a really nice guy. You know, I'm talking about stalking, and he raises his hand, and he says, you know, so I came home. We went out drinking. Then we went and got some food at Abe's, you know. And then we came home. I got home about 4 o'clock in the morning, and there's my ex-girlfriend sitting on the porch, or standing on the porch, you know. And the women in the class, which is, you know, on campus here is about two-thirds of the women or two-thirds of the students, their jaws drop. And, you know, none of the guys seem even remotely, you know, fazed by
this. Yeah, because what they're thinking about is what would happen if it was an ex-boyfriend
standing
there
on the
and
porch.
How horribly threatened they would feel in that moment.
Absolutely. And so, you know, I asked this guy, what do you do? Oh, I just went and talked to her. and I said, well, weren't you remotely, you know, scared or upset about this? And he says, well, you know, she's just a woman. She's just a girl. You know, and I said, hey, well, I joked. Maybe it was sort of morbid humor, but I joked and said, well, you know, they have this new technology. They're called knives.
Yeah.
And that kind of you might have a little advantage in terms of upper body strength, but not anymore.
No. You know,
and you have a gun.
Strong biceps aren't going to stop a bullet any time of the day. So.
Exactly. Or a baseball bat.
I mean, it speaks to the mindset, though.
Yes,
and I think that you
absolutely.
Know part of this is changing fundamentally that mindset that I'm a protected status or I'm an unprotected status because of my gender, my age, my sexual identity, my cultural heritage, you know, all those sorts of things.
I have some sort of power and privilege in a sense.
Great. And you know that we use that term safe space. I think it has some negative connotation, but I think you and I would agree that students should feel comfortable anywhere they are on campus.
Well, they have a legal federal right to.
Great.
So that is really the point of Title IX.
Oh, awesome. That is a great summary. That is a perfect summary of it. You know, that students should feel comfortable wherever they are in the learning environment.
And be legitimately safe as
awesome.
Well.
Awesome. Yeah. So if I'm interested in Title IX or anything like that, I'm sure there's some places I can go on campus to find out more about that.
The Title IX office, headed by Melody Werner. You can contact me in the Department of Sociology. The head of our team, Solange Samoys, also in the Department of Sociology.
And if you have any questions about the survey or how to, you know, encourage students to participate in it, I'm sure you guys have great language that you can pass along
to
help students understand the importance of this. Okay, so Roger Kern-Smith, if you Google him, you'll find him real easily.
Department of Sociology.
Okay, so we will make sure to, if you're listening to this on the web right now, we'll link over to information for you as well at WEMU.org. Roger, thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you.
This is Roger Kern-Smith, professor of sociology at Eastern Michigan University. We've been talking about the Title IX survey that is ongoing, and as we just discussed here, the overriding goal is to make Eastern a more comfortable place for all students, a safer place for all students, so that the goal being 100%, you walk across campus, you're in a classroom, you're in a building, you feel comfortable and safe in a learning environment, because it's so much easier to learn when you're not looking over your shoulder every darn second.
And the first step is to learn what the current situation is.
So thanks for being with us here today, Roger. Appreciate your time. This is Focus on EMU on 89.1 WEMU.